I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
With the latest orders, they are essentially now confined to one-fifth of the territory. So you basically ask people to go again to one-fifth of the territory and empty up the land. That's what prompted me to call it ethnic displacement and ethnic cleansing.
Israel is committing ethnic cleansing in Gaza. That's according to the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk. We'll speak with him in Geneva. But first, dozens are killed in Gaza in just the last 24 hours.
The F-16 shook the place. It struck this place, as you can see. Pools of blood, piles of martyrs. I mean, if you had seen the scene from the beginning, there were piles of martyrs.
We'll speak with an American doctor volunteering in Gaza about what he's seeing on the ground. Then heat domes from the United States to Europe.
I think we keep hearing about climate change, but I think we're definitely feeling it now. Because I think when I was younger, in summer it wasn't like this. It was some days, but nothing like this. So we're definitely seeing a change in the weather, 100%. So hopefully we can reverse it.
We'll speak with climate scientist Michael Mann. According to his latest report, heat domes and flooding have nearly tripled. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli attacks on Gaza killed nearly 100 Palestinians Monday, including at least 39 people who died when an Israeli warplane bombed a seaside cafe in northern Gaza City. Among those killed were children celebrating a birthday party. The prominent visual artist Franz Al-Salmi and the photojournalist Ismail Abu Hattab. He's at least the 227th Palestinian journalist killed by Israeli attacks on Gaza since October 2023. Palestinian journalist Bayan Abu Sultan was injured in the assault, along with dozens of others. Separately, Israel attacked tents housing displaced people in the courtyard of the Al-Aqsa Hospital in central Gaza. Al Jazeera reports it's the 10th time Israeli forces have attacked the medical complex. This comes as Gaza's hunger crisis continues to deepen. In Khan Yunis, Dropsite News reports 29-year-old Ayub Saber Abu al-Hussein died from severe malnutrition caused by the Israeli blockade. The United Nations warns the territory has completely run out of infant formula, putting hundreds of babies at imminent risk of death. Already, at least 66 Palestinian children have died of acute malnutrition due to Israel's blockade, according to Gaza officials. Meanwhile, Israel killed at least 15 people seeking food in southern Gaza at a militarized aid distribution site run by the U.S. and Israeli-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. 50 others were wounded in the airstrike.
These people had gone to eat. They went to get a morsel of food to eat. They said they were distributing aid. How do you call it aid? Then you shoot at people's children. Where is the world? Where are the people? You tell me aid and it's documented. Then why do you kill us?
With the latest attack, nearly 600 Palestinians have been killed while attempting to get food and aid at GHF sites. On Monday, the medical charity Doctors Without Borders condemned the shadowy group's operations as, quote, slaughter masquerading as humanitarian aid. After headlines, we'll go to Gaza for the latest. Here in New York, police arrested at least 28 people Monday as they ended a 40-day fast outside the U.S. mission to the United Nations by escalating their protest. Among those arrested was former Navy Corpsman and Veterans for Peace organizer Mike Ferner, who poured animal blood on the mission's entrance to condemn U.S. support for Israel's military.
Here, United States, have some blood. You like shedding it all over the world so much?
There you go. How about some blood?
On Capitol Hill, U.S. senators held another marathon session overnight Monday ahead of a final vote on President Trump's massive package of tax cuts for the wealthy and cuts to social programs benefiting poor and working families. At least two Republicans have broken ranks with party leaders to oppose Trump's so-called One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina cited deep cuts to Medicaid, which he says would devastate his state. And Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky cited the Congressional Budget Office's finding that the bill would add $3.3 trillion to the national debt. Under enormous pressure, Senator Tillis says he will not run in the next election. The Department of Justice has issued new directives aimed at stripping naturalized U.S. citizens of their status if they're accused of committing a crime or of posing a threat to the United States. A DOJ memo published earlier this month said naturalized citizens subjected to these civil proceedings would also not be entitled to an attorney. There are an estimated 25 million naturalized citizens living in the U.S. This comes as in an unprecedented move. Trump's DHS has built a national citizenship surveillance database in collaboration with the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, to store information from federal immigration agencies and the Social Security Administration. President Trump's traveling to Florida today for the opening of a new immigration jail that officials have dubbed Alligator Alcatraz, an isolated airfield in the Everglades that's been turned into a mass detention tent camp. The ICE jail is expected to hold up to 5,000 people awaiting deportation, costing an estimated $450 million a year to operate. Over the weekend, Miccosukee tribe leaders and environmental activists rallied outside the site after groups filed a lawsuit attempting to block the camp's opening until it undergoes an environmental review as required by federal law.
This is almost like we're living in a foreign country. They didn't do any environmental impacts. They didn't do anything about the housing, whether it's going to be safe. They're leaving these people out in the middle of hurricane season. This is just absolutely ridiculous.
Florida's Attorney General and Trump ally, James Uthmeyer, has said Florida will not invest much in security as the jail is surrounded by alligators and pythons. As protests grow against ICE raids nationwide, California activists are rallying in support of farm workers who have not returned to work in fields out of fear of arrest and deportation. Reuters estimates up to 70% of farm workers have been forced out of work as masked federal agents target their places of employment.
One wakes up in the morning in fear because many of us will leave our house and probably won't come back. And I think that's the concern of everyone who goes out to work in the mornings, to the fields mostly. Concerns about the sun, the heat, and yet another high concern is that many of us might not have the joy to return home. Many do, others do not.
Immigrant rights activists are calling on the Soccer Federation, FIFA, to ban ICE and other federal agents from its games during the 2025 Club World Cup hosted across U.S. cities, as well as next year's anticipated FIFA World Cup. Ahead of the start of the tournament, Customs and Border Protection vowed to be suited and booted at games. Advocates rallied outside FIFA's offices in Coral Gables, Florida, Monday.
We're here because we want people to feel safe going to their games. We don't want for people to be sitting at these games and watching families be separated, wondering whether or not ICE is going to come to their seat in the stands and ask them for their papers.
A new investigation reveals Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem secretly took a personal cut of $80,000 in political donations made to her dark money group, American Resolve Policy Fund, and failed to disclose it before joining the Trump administration, which could be illegal. ProPublica reports in 2023, while Noem was governor of South Dakota, the group, quote, routed funds to a personal company of Noem's that had recently been established in Delaware. The company's name is Ashwood Strategies. The news adds to mounting allegations of corruption in Trump's cabinet. In March, while Noem toured El Salvador's mega prison, Sicat, she was infamously photographed wearing a gold Rolex Cosmograph Daytona watch that costs around $50,000. The U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to hear a challenge to a 1971 campaign finance law that limits coordination between political parties and candidates. The challenge was brought by the National Republican Congressional Committee and two candidates, including then-Senator J.D. Vance. In a statement, Public Citizen called on justices to reject the challenge, writing, quote, in the 15 years since the Supreme Court Citizens United abysmal decision opened the floodgates to unlimited corporate and billionaire campaign spending, the corruption of American politics has gone from bad to worse, Public Citizen wrote. Iran's judiciary said Sunday Israel's attack on Tehran's Evin prison last month killed at least 71 people, including guards, prisoners, visiting family members, and people living nearby. Israeli officials haven't said why they targeted the prison, which has for decades housed political prisoners and dissidents. Meanwhile, Iran has rebuffed a request by the head of the UN's nuclear watchdog to visit nuclear sites bombed by Israel and the U.S. last month. On Monday, Iran's foreign minister called the request by the International Atomic Energy Agency chief Rafael Grossi meaningless and possibly even malign in intent, unquote. On Sunday, Grossi said he's convinced the U.S. attack on Iran failed to obliterate its nuclear program, as President Trump has repeatedly claimed.
They can have, in a matter of months, I would say, a few cascades of centrifuges spinning and producing enriched uranium, or less than that. But as I said, frankly speaking, one cannot claim that everything has disappeared and there is nothing there.
In climate news, a massive heat dome is bringing record temperatures to much of Europe, with forecasters warning of even more extreme heat in the coming days. Spain and Portugal just recorded their hottest ever June temperatures. France saw its first forest fires of the season erupt, while Italy put nearly two dozen cities under red alert heat advisories. In Turkey, more than 50,000 people have been evacuated. Fast-spreading wildfires. This comes after most of North America sweltered under warmer-than-average temperatures in June, with over 3,000 record-high temperatures recorded across the U.S. during last week's heat wave. For the first time in its history, Alaska issued a heat advisory in June after temperatures in Fairbanks reached 86 degrees Fahrenheit. We'll have more on heat domes and the climate crisis later in the broadcast when we speak with climatologist Michael Mann. Nearly half the population of Tuvalu has applied for visas to permanently relocate to Australia as the low-lying Pacific Island nation faces an existential catastrophe from rising sea levels. Australia has agreed to accept 280 climate refugees annually from Tuvalu's 11,000 citizens. And in Hong Kong, the opposition League of Social Democrats announced Sunday it'll disband after its members were prosecuted and jailed under a national security law imposed by Beijing in 2020. The crackdown came after party leaders helped organize massive street protests in 2019 in support of multi-party democracy in Hong Kong. This is Chan Po-ying, chair of the League of Social Democrats.
Over the 19 years since our founding, we have endured hardships of internal disputes and the near total imprisonment of our leadership while witnessing the erosion of civil society, the fading of grassroots voices, the omnipresence of red lines, and the draconian suppression of dissent. Despite such adversities, the League of Social Democrats persisted, doing what little we could just to remain true to our founding values and beliefs.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman, back in New York with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, the heat dome in Switzerland, where I just came from, was incredible. And we're going to talk more about that in a bit with the head of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. But now to Gaza. In northern Gaza City on Monday, an Israeli airstrike bombed a popular seaside cafe, killing at least 40 people. The Al-Baqa Cafe was a popular destination for Palestinians in Gaza looking for internet access, including journalists. Photojournalist Ismail Abu Hattab was killed. Palestinian journalist Bayan Abu Sultan was injured in the attack. Also among the dead was prominent visual artist Franz Al-Salmi and a group of children celebrating a birthday. Al Jazeera journalist Hani Mahmoud reported the attack on the cafe occurred without any warning, he said. At least 95 people in Gaza were killed Monday. Separate attacks hit a tent encampment in the courtyard of the Al-Aqsa Hospital in central Gaza and the Yafa School, which had been sheltering hundreds of people. Israeli forces killed at least 15 people seeking food in southern Gaza at a militarized aid distribution site run by the U.S. and Israeli-backed group, the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. 50 others were wounded. This is Hassam al-Hawadri, an eyewitness.
Hunger, hunger, hunger. No matter how much I tell you hunger, there is hunger in Gaza. There is humiliation. This is humiliation. You bring me aid to kill me. You said this is aid and it is documented and signed. Then why these massacres? These people had gone to eat. They went to get a morsel of food to eat. They said they were distributing aid. How do you call it aid? Then you shoot at people's children. Where is the world? Where are the people? You tell me aid and it's documented. Then why do you kill us?
More than 600 Palestinians have been killed while attempting to seek aid from the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation sites. Already, at least 66 Palestinian children have died of acute malnutrition due to Israel's blockade. That's according to Gaza officials. For more on these latest developments in Gaza, we go to Gaza, where we're joined by Dr. Abdul Basit Khan, who is a neurosurgeon volunteering with Rama Worldwide at the Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. He's an American doctor volunteering in Gaza right now. Thank you so much for being with us, doctor. I understand just before we went to air, there was another bomb right near you.
Thank you, Amy. Yes. In fact, there were four bombings just south of the Khan Yunis complex while we were joining the phone call. These are residential areas, indiscriminate bombing. And I'm sure after this call, I'll go treat the patients in the emergency room.
And Dr. Khan, some of the patients that you've been treating, could you talk about the injuries they're suffering?
Yes, definitely. So I'm a neurosurgeon. I treat brain and spine pathologies. That was just another bomb. I've been treating mostly blast injuries. My patients are all dislocated and living in tents. They are being indiscriminately bombed by the Israeli occupation forces. My first day here, within 2 hours of arriving, I operated on a 10-year-old girl who was in her tent and was struck by a bomb. Father said he was outside of the tent. A bomb came from the sky. She became immediately unconscious. Came to me. She had shrapnel going through both, ripping through both frontal lobes. I operated on her that night. Thankfully, she's doing well. These types of bombings affect entire families. I was later consulted on an adult woman in the ICU who had shrapnel penetrating the front of her neck, causing a large neck hematoma. I was consulted by the head and neck surgeon because there was shrapnel lodged in her spine. That woman turned out to be the mother of the patient I had just operated. The poor father is here going between both ICUs. These kinds of conditions and these kinds of scenarios are very common. In fact, just before I logged into this call, I took care of one young boy, 8 years old, similar story. In the tent, he has shrapnel ripping through both frontal lobes. We will soon operate the patient as soon as we have an operating room available. Everything is in resource limitation in Gaza. Then later in the emergency room, I took care of his father, who also had shrapnel injury to the back of the head. These are the kinds of patients I'm seeing.
A few days ago, Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, reported that Israeli soldiers, IDF soldiers that they've interviewed, said that they were ordered to fire on unarmed crowds near food distribution sites. There's been over 500 Palestinians killed since May at these food distribution sites. What are your other colleagues talking to you about the kinds of people who have been killed or wounded by gunfire at these distribution sites?
It's an excellent question. The injuries from the aid sites are very common, and we're seeing these injuries every single day. I myself, yesterday night, we had a patient come from the aid site in a delayed fashion after he was struck with shrapnel in the back of the head. The day prior, I had seen a 25-year-old man who had a single gunshot wound with a high-velocity rifle, entrance in the posterior aspect, back of the neck. They shot him in the back of the neck, and it exited the front part of the chest. It severed his spinal cord. He can no longer move his arms or his legs, and he will remain like that for the rest of his life. He's only 25 years old. I reviewed with my colleagues the cases that they're seeing. One of the cardiologists here, he saw a patient who had been shot in the chest at the aid site. Had blood collecting around his heart, preventing his heart from beating. They had to emergently drain the bleeding from around the heart. One of my colleagues is an orthopedic surgeon. Yesterday, he amputated three limbs of different patients, young, healthy, civilian patients, just seeking aid. And as you can imagine, that's very morbid to lose an arm or a leg. My other colleague is a urologist. He took care of three patients yesterday who were all separate patients shot in the scrotum. Two he operated on, and one he is managing conservatively. The one he's managing conservatively is a seven-year-old boy. A seven-year-old boy was with his father in the aid station and was shot in the scrotum. And unfortunately, one of my colleagues, the cardiologist, saw a patient who was dead on arrival. Seven-year-old boy was shot, multiple gunshots at the aid station. So these cases are very common.
Just to be clear, the medical charity, Doctors Without Borders, is saying that this Israeli-U.S. food distribution scheme in Gaza is degrading Palestinians by design, forcing them to choose between starvation or risking their lives for minimal supplies. With over 500 people killed, nearly 4,000 wounded while seeking aid, MSF says, Medical Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders says, this scheme is slaughter masquerading as humanitarian aid and must be immediately dismantled. Dr. Basit Khan, you're a doctor. I know you can't talk about politics here, but you are seeing what's happening right there on the ground. Are your patients, those that are conscious, talking about having gone to get food?
Yes. So usually it's the young adult men that are going to get the food on behalf of the family. But like I said, even seven-year-old boys have gone with their families to attempt to get food. Beyond the patients, it's not just the patients, Amy. Even the doctors here are suffering from starvation. There's minimal food available. No one in Gaza is eating meat. I haven't seen one person eat meat since I've arrived. I'm talking to my neurosurgery colleagues who are native Palestinians living here and working here in Gaza. Their situation is very dire. One of the colleagues told me he lost 50 kilograms, that's almost 100 pounds, since the start of the occupation and the war. Food insecurity is rampant from all levels of society, from the poor to the, you know, even the physicians are not eating. And this stretches to the patients as well. The 10-year-old girl that I mentioned, we operated on her the same night she came. Thankfully, she had a good neurological recovery. The next morning, I wanted to start her with tube feeding so she could get some nutrition to recover from her injury. I talked to the pediatric ICU doctor, who is a Palestinian native, who lives in Gaza, has been working here for the entire war. He said, yes, I agree with you. We should give the tube feeding, but it's not available. There is no tube feeding in the pediatric ICU for the 10-year-old girl in Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. It's not available.
Finally, Doctor, you are an American doctor who works in Houston. You're a neurosurgeon. What is it like to be there at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis for you? Does anything in your life experience compare?
No, definitely this is the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life by far. You know, I had been following the occupation since the beginning, and you read about the devastation, the destruction, the humiliation, the hunger, the starvation, the death, and even just it just does not do it justice. Everywhere you look, the hospital is overcrowded. Families are living in the hospital. The supplies to do the operations are limited. The Israeli forces will not allow you to bring such supplies in. We're using single-use items, for example, drill bits and such tools that you're supposed to dispose of after each use. They're not available, so we cannot dispose of them. We're reusing them and reusing them and attempting to sterilize them. The operations that take me maybe 45 minutes to 1 hour in Houston are taking me 2 to 3 hours here in Nasser Hospital. Nasser Hospital itself was a victim of bombing. There's no windows in Nasser Hospital because they've all been destroyed. There's no windows, meaning the bugs come into the hospital. You know, all of the operations I've done in the operating room, because there's no air filtration system left, there are bugs coming into my operating field. This situation is so dire and so unacceptable. I'm totally flabbergasted. At the same time, I have to really respect and recognize my Palestinian colleagues. You know, I've only been here a short time. My Palestinian colleagues, the neurosurgery team here, they are themselves displaced from the European General Hospital, the European Gaza Hospital. They each have been relocated more than 7 times each. The doctors are living in the tents, but they still come here. Every other day, they take 24-hour call, 2 teams. They have not been paid salary, and they have been managing these patients with such little technology, such little tools, and they're managing them to a very high degree. So I really respect and admire my colleagues here. And no, this is the worst thing I've ever seen in my whole life.
Dr. Abdul Basit Khan, thank you so much for being with us. Neurosurgeon volunteering at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, speaking to him in Gaza. Although the Israeli military, the Israeli government, Netanyahu, the prime minister, does not allow international journalists to cover on the ground what's happening in Gaza unless they are embedded. You can see it is not difficult to speak to people on the ground, and you should call the networks and ask them to do that. It is absolutely critical to understand what Dr. Khan is saying. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has announced he'll be coming to the U.S. next week to meet with President Trump and other officials in the administration. He says the meetings will discuss how to, quote, capitalize on the success of the attack on Iran by Israel and the United States.
I'm expected to travel next week to the United States for meetings with the President of the United States, Donald Trump, with Vice President Vance, with the Secretary of State and the National Security Advisor, Marco Rubio, with the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, with the President's Envoy to the Middle East, Steve Witkoff, and with the Secretary of Commerce. We have a few matters to finalize beforehand in order to reach a trade agreement, in addition to other issues. There will also be meetings with congressional and Senate leaders and security meetings, which I will not elaborate on here. These matters follow the great victory we achieved in Operation Am Kalavi. Capitalizing on success is no less important than achieving it.
Will Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, be talking also about Gaza? We're joined now by Mohammed Shahada, a writer and analyst from Gaza, a visiting fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations. Thanks so much for being with us, Mohammed. Many have said that Israel's attack on Iran, that part of it was to distract from what's happening in Gaza, the intensification of the violence. Can you talk about what's happening there in the West Bank?
Thanks so much, Amy, for having me. Yes, precisely. I was in Brussels right before the Israeli attack on Iran, and Gaza became a very prominent headline there. There was so much momentum that European leaders couldn't escape away from it. They had to save face. And as soon as the attack on Iran happened, you can see them immediately having a giant moment of relief. They were delighted that Gaza would disappear from headlines, and they're very keen to keep it this way. Right now, the situation there, you basically have Israel having lined up the entire population like ducks in less than a fifth of Gaza's area. They issued over 50 evacuation orders since March 18th. The latest evacuation orders were issued to the most populated areas in Gaza City itself, the areas where there was some ability to maintain organized human life. And basically, Israel is asking them to evacuate to the very areas that have been evacuated already, to an area that is already under an evacuation order, Deir el-Balah and Zawaida. And basically, recently, an Israeli officer called an elderly Gazan, and he said, "You have to evacuate now. We're issuing mass evacuation orders for your area." The old man responded with tears in his eyes, and he said, "Go ahead, bomb us. We have nowhere to go. We don't even have physical energy to run away." And he